Okay, Boker Tov, Shavuot Tov, everybody. A pleasure to see everybody. As we get started, I understand last week I had to listen to online, but was an introduction. And this week we get to number seven. So the biblical number seven, a series of sevens, and a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Liebtag. And we look forward to a wonderful week of learning and many wonderful shirim. So, Vakasha Rabbi, it's all yours. Okay,
thank you. So two things. Last week we introduced Shemitah. And today we're going to go back to the title of seven, because there's a double title, the Shemitah, and there's number seven. Of course, they're related. So last week I was in a, we did it from the airport. So I didn't have everything, I didn't have my home setting. So I took a nice, easy, I took a simple topic. But today we're going to go back to really is the main topic, how the number seven begins. Let me just check the chat real fast to make sure our connection is good. Okay, Boker Tov. There we go. Let me share my source sheet and we'll get started. Here we go. So, Shemitah, biblical meaning of seven, and today's class number two. And the title today is number seven in Sefer Bereshit, which is going to get everything started. So, last week we began our introduction, laws of Shemitah, and this week, and we discussed the rhythms of nature, the 365 day year, the seasons, and the 24 hour day, which is basically day and night. It's a rhythm that repeats itself day, night. And then seasons, spring, fall, winter, and spring, summer, fall, and winter. That's it. So those are things that controls our life. And then each of those has a cycle of seven. There's a seven-day week and a seven-year Shemitah cycle. We talked about how they're connected and the logic behind it. But to appreciate why Chumash picks the number seven for all those, we need the story of creation. So we're going to go back to Bereshit, understand the meaning of seven. And why almost every single time we have anything has to do with nature relates to number seven. Just before we begin Perek Aleph, where do we have it in Bereshit? We have the number seven in creation, of course. The flood story, I'm not sure if you remember from 2 weeks ago, there's 7 days before the 40 days. In the beginning of chapter seven, Ki lamim od shiva anochi mamter. And for some reason, there needs to be 7 days before 40 days and 40 nights. And we have the same thing later at Har Sinai. That'll be one of our topics in later Shiurim. Wait, how the number 70 relates to Har Sinai as well. And then the 7 days of Miluim, etc. Brit Milah relates to seven, even though it's on the eighth day. It's the eighth day is the first day after seven. So we have to dedicate a share to why there's a Brit on the eighth day, because eight also relates to seven. Interesting that Avram got into this because when he makes a treaty with Avimelech, he sets aside seven kvasim, you know, because he could pick any number, but for some reason, there's seven lambs in his treaty with Avimelech. Even more interesting, with Yaakov and Lavan, the number seven comes up all through the story. I'm going to work for 7 years for Rachel and then 7 years for Leah, and then there's a seven-day week. And he seems, there's no concept of a week before the story of the man, as we'll see. But for some reason, there seems to be a week celebration of the wedding, remember? This is Malei Shavua Zot. We have to dedicate, not a shir, but a couple of minutes and 1 shir later, why that number seven is so central to the story of Yaakov and Lavan. And finally, Pharaoh's dream, which clearly is about agriculture, in case you didn't catch on, the whole thing. Also, it's 7 years of famine, 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. So that's going to be the number seven as well. So those are... those are all the links. Those are all the mentions of seven in Bereshit, and it's going to develop even more in Shemot, like over and over again in Shemot. But again, I want to begin today with somebody who want to dedicate the story of creation. Now, what I want to begin with, let's open the first. Let me share the screen. Actually, before we do the screen, stop the share for a second. I want to talk about something which seems to be what the Kuzari is saying, but something very in general. Everyone knows there's two names for God in the Torah. There's Shem Elokim. Shem Elokim is one name for God. It's like a common noun. And Shem Yudke Vavke, it's called Shem Havaya, which is God's personal name. Chumash purposely uses the two names, two different stories of creation, these aspects of that story of creation. But in the very first story, God's name is Elokim. And there's a famous question is, have a name for God. But the name for God that we use is plural, meaning God's name is many gods. So we're into this idea of monotheism, that there's only one God. For some reason, in the very first line of Chumash, we talk about God, this one God, and his name is many gods. Now, if I understood Rabbi Yehuda Levi correctly in the Kuzari, he's saying is, that's the whole point of God's name, is that what appears to be many powers is really one power. Because ancient man viewed many powers of nature. Remember, everyone knows there's a sun god and a moon god and a rain god and a fertility god and war gods and wind gods and things like that. Therefore, Chumash uses one name, Elohim, to describe many gods, but then conjugates it in the singular by almost making a mistake in Hebrew. That's by basically making a mistake in Hebrew, saying many gods and conjugating it in the singular. That's how Chumash teaches monotheism in its very opening line. So we'll get back to that theme later on. What I want to do now is try to understand what's going on in the story of creation. I'm going to have a little file here and show you as follows here. Share my screen. And, we were sharing our screen here. So we have the number 7. Now we have to go to Breshit. Here we go. So look at this file. And what I want to show you, I'll make it a little bit smaller to start with. I have here the 7 days of creation. Or 6 days of creation, depending on what you consider a day of creation. It's day one, this little box is day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, and day six. Each day gets a little bit longer.
Rabbi, you want to make it slightly bigger? I imagine people would.
I'm going to make it big. I'm making it smaller now just to show it that I have 7 days here. Now I'm going to make it bigger. Now I'm going to make it bigger. Here we go. To read the psukim themselves. Here's what I want to point out now. There's a certain format to the story, which is key in understanding how it's going to work. How does every day begin? There's a parshia. If you look in a regular Tanakh, each day is a parshia. So day two begins with Vayomer Elokim. Day three begins with Vayomer Elokim. Day four begins with Vayomer Elokim. Day five, day six. In other words, the phrase Vayomer Elokim comes up quite often. And every day of creation, even day one, if I take the first two psukim as introductory, then day one also, every day begins with Vayomer Elokim something. And every day ends, which we all familiar with Vayer, Vayboker, Yom Blank. So it's just as far as format goes, there's a very basic format to every day of creation. What's that format? The format is, it begins with Vayomer Elokim, God said something. And every day ends with a very similar phrase, Vayer Vayvoker Yom Echad. But there's way more to the format than just that opening line and closing line. And now, why is that format important? As we're going to claim over and over again, the Chumash is a book to study, not just read. Therefore, the message of Chumash that I derive is not only from reading the text, it's from studying the text. And we're going to see in a minute, I'm sure most of you are familiar with this, there are numerous parallels between the different days of creation. So I want to point out, based on the format, this parallel that the days are setting up, and then we have to try to understand what's the meaning of the parallel. So let's begin just with what follows every Vayomer Elokim. In each day of creation, it doesn't only begin with God saying something. God's going to say a command, and every command is going to be followed by an execution. I just want to point it out, make sure it's clear. Vayomer Elokim, command, Yior, execution by Yior. That's the simplest form. That's like the simplest form possible. Let there be light, and there was light. The next day, what's God say? Yihi rakia b'toch ha-mayim v'imavdil b'mayim l'mayim. Now, that's the command. What's the execution? It doesn't just say Yihi rakia. Remember, Vayior. Now it gets a little more complex. Vayas Elokim et ha-rakia. God says it, and he does it. God makes the rakia. So we have the command, the execution, and it happens. Now, we'll go back to other similarities, but simply I want to point out every day begins with a command and execution. Day three, command, let the waters recede and let the dry land come up. And here it's just by Yichen, and it happens. That's an easy. So no, sometimes it says, it just happened. Sometimes we get the detail of how it happens. Day four, God says, Yihi morot b'rkiya shamayim. Let there be the big lights, the luminaries in the sky, to separate between day and night. And they'll be for otot the moedim. What those mean, we'll talk about later on. And then God continues and says, here we have, it's interesting. God says, let there be these luminaries, and it was. And then it explains how it came about. He puts the moon, the sun in charge of the day, the moon in charge of the night. And he puts them again in the heavens to give light on the land. And also we have the word Limshol, we'll talk about again. We'll get all the add-ons later on. The main thing is command execution. Day five, Yishesu HaMayim shares Nefesh Chaya, he commands the water to make living things and for the birds to fly in the sky. And then here when God does it, it's very interesting. We have the verb Vayivra. But usually it's Vayas. Now we have Vayivra. God creates these big sea creatures, whatever they are, these taninim, and all every living things in the water, and then all the birds. So basically, there's a commandment and execution. And finally, on day six, in a very similar manner, God says, first he commanded the water, Yishesu HaMayim. Now he commands the land, Totzi HaAretz Nefesh Chaya, lift the land, bring out living things, and all the animals. And then, and again, by Yichen, and then how God did it, V'yasikim et Chayat, Chayat HaAretz, the Mina, again, command execution. So that should be crystal clear. That was nice and simple. I want to make sure everyone understood it. Every single day begins with command execution. Almost every day follows with an evaluation. God says there's an execution. There's a command execution followed by an evaluation on day one. This should have been highlighted. By Yar Elohim, was to say it was good. Yeah, it's highlighted. It's like, by Yar Elohim et Or Ki Tov. Let's change our color here. How do I change my color? Okay, just yellow is good enough. God sees it's good. Here also, where does God say it's? Oh, day two is missing. That's interesting. For some reason, there's no evaluation on day two. On day three, God sees that it's good after the command and execution. On day four, God sees that it's good. Ve'alim kitov. I have it here in italics. And on day five, God sees that it's good. And on day six, what happens? I'm sorry, right here. Bayar Lukim Kitov, he makes the animals and God sees that it's good. Alrighty? So again, every single day, command execution, evaluation, except for day two, which is only command execution without an evaluation. Every day ending Bayar Vay Boker. That is clearly... that's clearly a pattern. Now, in addition to that, there's always an add-on. On the first 3 days, God is giving out names. That should be crystal clear. On day one, he names the Or, day, Yom, and the night, Laila. So he gives names to day and night. Day two, he's going to call the water above, call them Shemaim. Remember, he makes the Rakia, the divide between the water above and the water below. And the water there, Sham, there above, is Maim. So the Maim Sham, or the Sham Maim, becomes called Shamaim. Later, the water below will be called Yamim. On day three, he calls the Yabasha, he calls it Aretz. And the water that remains down below, he calls Yamim. And that's it for God giving names. Notice on days one, two, and three, God gives names. Afterwards, he stops giving names. Later, if you remember, in Gan Eden, man starts giving out names. Another thing that's going to develop later on, first God gives names to the things, the big things he created. Then he makes man. Man gives names to all the living things. And ultimately, man's going to make a name for God. But that'll take a while in Sefer Bereshit, and it'll be a theme to the rest of Chumash. This idea of names is going to be a mega theme in Chumash. Again, it's just starting here in creation. Now, so again, what's unique today is one, two, and three are going to be God giving names. On days four, five, and six, God's giving out jobs. You know what? He makes the luminaries, the sun and the moon and the stars, but the sun is in charge of the day. What's it say here? God made the two morot hagdolim, the big luminaries. Notice he doesn't call them sun and moon. He just calls them Mor Agadol and Mor Katan, You don't want to mention names of, because calling the sun Shemesh is actually a name of a god. The same thing with Yireach. So the Mor HaGadol was Memshelet Hayom. It's in charge of the day. And the Mor HaKatan, the moon, is in charge of the night. So everyone has that, each thing he makes has a job. On day five, he adds a blessing. He doesn't give a name, but after making all these living things, he blesses them and tells them Purvu. That'll be something new. He has them, that's a blessing of being fruitful and multiply. And we have a very similar blessing later when God makes man, which we'll see. We'll get to man in a minute. But in a nutshell, there was every day of creation has something special. The first 3 days, names, and the last 3 days, jobs. Jobs and blessings. Now, that was the boring part. Now we'll get to the interesting part. If I match up, and this again, I'm hoping this should be obvious. I'll start with a question, which I ask, which is, let me stop the share for a second. And one second, not a new share. We went stop share and just check the chat real fast. Okay, we'll get to the Rambam. Actually, I'll get to the questions later on. Now, on the parallels, here's what I want to point out. On day four, God makes the Me'orot, right? And he puts the sun in charge of the day. Now, this question sounds like it's a joke, but I'll explain what I mean by the joke. The question I ask my students all the time is, why did God put the sun in charge of the day when it's light out? It would be better to give us the sun at night when it's dark. We don't need the sun during the day because it's already, there's daylight. Why put the sun in charge of the day? So everyone asks the question, what do you mean? They learned in physics class that what? That we have sun, we have light because of the sun. But I say, no, that's not true. Because there's already day and night and day one. So don't tell me we have day and night because of the sun. There's day and night before there's the sun and moon. That's the joke I asked to get them thinking. Meaning, it simply proves to you that you can't take the story of creation literally. As Ebenezer points out, whenever I have a story in Chumash where the literal meaning of the story doesn't make any sense, where the story contradicts itself, that allows me, almost forces me not to take it literally, but to take it seriously. Meaning, Chumash is not giving me a play-by-play description of what happened, of how God did it, but rather it's describing creation. It's called etiology, where I have day and night, and I have stars, I have nature. I'm making up a story to explain the meaning of the present reality. I think the fancy word in English is etiology, E-T-I-O-L-O-G-Y, something like that. It's when you make up a story, every culture has them, there's a certain reality, and then I have a story that explains it. You have that in Chumash a lot, like, that's why we don't eat Gidan Hashem. So we have a story about Yaakov that explains why Am Yisrael has the custom of not eating Gidan Hashem and things like that. But that's a simple example. The best example, again, is creation. We have nature. Chumash gives us a story to understand, not to tell us how God did it, but to give meaning to why God did it. More so, I want to show you, is to explain why we keep Shabbat or the meaning of Shabbat. If I want to make it cute, it's not, we don't keep Shabbat because God created in 7 days. God created in 7 days so we keep Shabbat. Shabbat's going to be key. We're going to talk about that a lot. Shabbat's going to be that, remember that external cycle that we're putting on top of the natural cycle. We're taking a natural cycle and imposing upon it a religious cycle of 7 days. Not just putting us in control of time, it's taking, instead of being controlled by time, we'll be controlled by God, or we'll put God into nature. Now, why am I asking that question? You know, why did God put the sun on day four? Simply to point out that day one and day four are parallel to each other. In what way? Just look at the words. It's a giveaway. What's it say? Let me make this a little bit bigger. What happens on day one? God makes on day one, he or. Here we have ma'orot, the same word. A ma'or, put the mem in front of the word or, and you have the word, no, the luminaries. There's no doubt that day one and day four are connected. Let me make a little, where's my toolbar? I lost my toolbar. One second. Let me try again. Share screen. Okay, here's my toolbar. Annotate. And now I need a here we go. That's it. That's what I wanted. So I have Ma'orot and Or. So you can see how they're related. Day one relates to day four. Now that could be just coincidental, but then when we look later on, you'll see that day two relates to day five. In what way? There's the Rakia that divides between the water above and water below. And what do you have on day five? We have Of Yofeth Rakia Shamayim. It's just that we had a division between the water above and water below, and that made the, again, the sea below and the sky above. What do we have on day five? God makes animals, but what? But the animals are in the sea. So there's no land animals on day five because there's no land on day two. On day two, we simply have the Shamayim and the Yamim. We have the sky and the seas. And therefore, we populate them on day five with living things in the water and in the sky. And then we talk about how God makes them. Now, if day one parallel to day two and day, I mean, to four and two is to five, then obviously three will be to six. And that's really easy to see because let me move this down. It's not going to work now. We're going to have to clear the drawing and back to my mouse and move it down a little bit. What do we have on day three? Let's get this up a little, make this smaller. There we go. What do we have on day three? Let's go back and see what we have on day three. On day three, put all the drawings there. On day three, what does God say? We have the Abasha, and the Abasha turns into the land. And what do we have on day six? On day six, actually started down here below. Totsiha Aretz actually was right here. Let me do the, where's my annotation? And a line. So we have on day three, we have the Aretz and we have Totsiha Aretz. God makes land and then we have land animals. So that should be crystal clear. I want to make sure again, I'm assuming everyone knows everything I just showed you. But I have to make sure that's crystal clear to do the big jump we're going to do now. I mean, there's no doubt that Chumash wants the reader on his own to recognize that day one is parallel to four, two to five, and three to six, because that's not by chance. It's a perfect parallel all the way through. Chumash doesn't say in the beginning, pay attention to the parallel. But it's clear that Chumash is setting up a parallel that it wants the reader to discover. And again, I'm making a big deal about it because it's, in my opinion, that proves that Chumash is a book to study and not read. Now, once Chumash is setting up that pattern, the question is going to be, what's the purpose of that parallel? That Chumash doesn't spill the beans. It doesn't tell you the answer. That's what we have to figure out. And that's what the Parshanim usually talk about. Now, let's take a look at... let's just make sure we're recording. Okay, we're on. Now, there's one major exception to everything I just told you. Because what do we see? Every day has an act of creation, correct? Command, execution, evaluation. When it comes to day three, something totally new happens. What happens on day three? On day three, we have two distinct acts of creation. And then we're going to find on day six, we're going to have two distinct acts of creation. Yeah, I made a big deal about the pattern, command, execution, evaluation, because it happens every day. Day one, two, four, and five, it happens once. On days three and six, we have two acts of creation. Again, command, execution, evaluation. And again, so it shows you that there's an additional parallel between three and six, but there must be a reason why days three and six have two acts of creation as opposed to the other days only have one. So let's see what's happening on day three. And the two acts of creation on day three must relate to the two acts of creation on day six. So let's take a quick look and see what happens. Let's go back to day three. It goes as follows. What's the first act of creation on day three? I can make this bigger so we can read inside. Okay, what happens on day three? God makes land. And God calls the land Aretz, and then the water by default becomes Yamim, and God evaluates and it's good. I'm going to call this now 3B. 3 with the two stars, that'd be 3B. What does God say now? An additional act of an additional command. Vayomer Elokim, same format. Tatshei haaretz deshe esem asri asera itzpri osepri lemino asher zarob haaretz vayichem. Another command, followed by the execution. Vatotzei haaretz deshe esem asri asera lemino itzpri asher zarob lemino vayar Elokim kitov. Okay, got it? There's two Vayomer Elokims on this day and two evaluations. Let's highlight this evaluation. Got it? And we'll notice that they are totally parallel. Vayar Elohim Kitov, Vayar Elohim Kitov, all on the same day. Okay? And two Vayomer Elohims. So there's two acts of creation. Now, what's the connection between them? 3A is land. 3B is vegetation. Now, of course, they're connected because without land, you can't have vegetation. But on the other hand, why is there a need for two separate acts of creation? Why can't God do it all in one? So for some reason, we're having two acts of creation on day three. We'll see the parallel in a minute in day six. What happens on day six? Let's take a look here on the side. Let's undo my drawings and look at day six. Mouse and small. Okay. What happens on day six? We have as follows. On day six, the first thing that God makes, Vayomer Elokim, Totzei haaretz nefesh chaya, he makes the land animals and he evaluates them. On top here, God sees that they're good. That's 6A. 6B, God makes man. Vayomer Elokim, naseh adam betzameinu kidmuteinu. We'll read the psukim more in detail. 6A is land animals, 6B are what we call humans. You get command, execution, evaluation on 6A and on 3A and 3B. Is there an evaluation on 6B? We'll talk about soon. But everything is building up now that 6B is the last thing that God does. And on 6B, he makes man. Now, let's talk about the parallel now. Let me stop this share and go to the other. Oh, so it was the same form. Here we go. Go back to the regular source sheet. So here we go. What do we have? Day one, Or. Day four, sun, moon, and stars, Ma'orot. Day two, Rakia. Day five, fish in the sea and fowl in the heavens. Day 3A and 3B, land and vegetation or plants. And day three, land animals and men. Now, when you look at the parallel, what do you see? Between 3A and 3B, between these two, they're related, but I call it a quantum leap. Because what's changing? In 3B, we begin life. And what's unique to life is there's life and there's death. But every living thing, before it dies, it can reproduce itself. Therefore, what do we have? We're going from what's called from domain to tzomeach in Hebrew, from, I guess, inanimate objects, things that don't, that just their matter. And then we move to life forms. Every life forms, you know, they live, but they die. But before they die, they can reproduce themselves. Therefore, it's esev mazriya zera, etzpri osepri. God made, you know, shrubbery, but it gives seeds so it can make more before it dies. So even though 3 and 3B are related, there's what I call a quantum leap between 3A and 3B. There's a big leap between land and land animals. I mean, between land and vegetation. On day 6, we also have from 6A to 6B. But it's not as obvious a quantum leap as we had on 3A to 3B. Why? Because on day 3, on day 6, God first makes land animals, then he makes man. The difference between man and animal didn't seem to be as big as the difference between land and fruits. Because here I'm moving from, again, from domain to tzomeach, from land animals to life forms. Here I'm just having two different life forms. One may be more a bit advanced. What I want to claim is that parallel is one of the key points of creation. That what does God want us to realize? That even though 6A and 6B seem to be similar, Chumash is highlighting that there's a qualitative difference between man and animal. Because when you look at nature, especially when you take science classes or like natural history and things like that, what are humans? Humans are just another mammal. similar to other land animals, we might be a little more advanced. So we're maybe a little faster in the evolution, but we're basically super duper apes with more abilities. What Chumash wants to do, which again, this is not my interpretation. Again, the parallel is clear. I want to suggest an interpretation or a subjective interpretation on the meaning. Chumash wants to highlight and wants man to realize that he's different than animal, because I think that's where religion begins. Religion begins when man realizes there's a big difference between man and animal, even though it's not so obvious when you first look at it. You can argue what that difference is, but whatever the difference is, that's going to be man's tzelem Elokim. Now we're going to read now the day 6b. We're going to read God making man to point out and try to see what's so special about man. So let's return now to the Bereshit Perek Aleph. We're going to go to 6b. We're going to make it a lot bigger so we can read it. And we're going to notice a couple of things. Okay, let's see how God makes man now. Vayomer Elokim. Look at everything so peculiar about God making man. Vayomer Elokim. Naseh Adam Betzamenu Kidmotenu. Number one, the plural. Some people call it the royal we. But what's going on here? Why is God saying the plural? In fact, the only time that we're using plural for the name Elokim. So Rashi points out that God's talking to his board members, to his Beitin Shamala, the celestial bodies above, and he's consulting them before making man, so they shouldn't be, there shouldn't be jealousy. But there's no doubt that if every single other act of creation, God talks in the singular, he doesn't consult anyone before creating, before making man, he seems to be consulting with his previous creations. He says, again, it's not clear who God's talking to, but God's consulting with someone, with some body, before making man. But the use of the word naseh in the introduction is only saying something special about man. And bitzamenu kidmutenu, right? Similar to God. What's this idea of tzelem kim? We'll talk about it very soon. Now, just like on day 4, God put the sun and the moon in charge of everything above in the sky, God's putting man in charge of everything down below. Why? But you do bitgatayam above Hashemayim, man will be in charge, or put dominion over the sea animals and the land and the birds and the land animals and basically everything under the sun. There's everything God made on day 4, I'm saying everything God made on day 5 and 6 and 6a, which is every living thing, man is in charge of, just like the sun and the moon are in charge of everything up in the sky on day 1 and day 4, on day 1, 2, and 4. Now, so that's the command. At the execution, again, we have the verb bara. Vayivra Elokim at Adam Betzamo. A separate verb bria exists for man. Something unique. We had bara also when they began the sea animals in day 5. We had God made the taninim. Now we have vayivra. God makes man betzamo. And again, betzalim elokim bara oto. Zachar kiva bara otam. So using the word bara over and over again here, it's quite obvious. God's making man in his image. Now, what does it mean that man is in God's image? We'll talk about soon. But Elohim has been doing all these acts of creation. The very last act of creation is Elohim making man, Bitzelem Elohim. And what I want to claim is that if Elohim has been creating new things every day, and this is the last thing he creates, the last thing that God creates is a living thing that can be creative like God. We'll bring an example of this very shortly. Then God blesses men, like he blessed the other living things with pu'urvu, and fill the land. But part of the blessing, which I think is part of man's nature now, is, let's clear the drawings and go back to the mouse. Right? He's in charge of, again, urdu bidgat hayam uvav hashamayim v'cho chayam ramas atar, like I said before, you're in charge of all living things down here on earth. Now, in addition to that, and this is going to highlight the parallel between 3b and 6b, between the second act of when God makes vegetation, God makes, remember, so what's God saying now? In Pasach Chavtet, I have another Vayomer Elokim, which is no longer a command, but rather, I guess, a statement. that man's diet. This is not Vayomer Elokim followed by a command and execution, but rather Vayomer Elokim talking about man's diet. Says what? Hinei natati lechem et kol eseb zorei hazera asher al pnei kol haaretz. God seems to be talking to man, saying, I'm giving you to eat all vegetation and et kol haaretz asher bo pri eitz, all fruit trees. Zorei hazera lechem yelochla. What's your diet? You can have what basically bori pri eitz and bori pri adama. If I understand why we differentiate in blessings between bori pri eitz and bori pri adama, a Jew before he makes a blessing. You make a blessing for eating food, but we differentiate between if it's a vegetable or if it's a fruit. And there's a special bracha for vegetables, something growing from the ground, bori pri adama, but if it's a fruit, we say bori pri haetz. So that distinction, which is clear when we make bracha, we make blessings, begins here in God's command to man, what he gets to eat. What's even more interesting is that God says, what do animals get to eat? What do the animals get to eat? Every living thing other than man gets to eat only vegetation. It's called Yerek Esev. Now remember that phrase Yerek Esev, because after the flood, when man gets permission after the flood to eat meat, God says, I'm giving you meat to eat like Yerek Esev. Is that good or bad? A great discussion. So, and then what? Now we have an evaluation. By Yara Likim et Kol Asher Asat, evaluation on everything God made. And therefore, only when God makes man, man doesn't have a separate tov by man, because man can be good or bad, as we'll see in Gan Eden. But everything that God made, the whole system together, is tov ba'od, and then by Yara by Boker Yom Shishi. Now, let me just check real fast the chat. Okay, on the, wait a second, let me check, what was that question about Pruvu? I'll check the chat again. Again, I'll get to the chat at the end of the share. So what do we have? What I want to claim is yeah, because like Chilul Hashemayim after day six, there's no more creation. Notice that day seven doesn't fit the pattern. It doesn't end by Yiv, Vayboker, Yom Shvi, or Yom HaShabbat. It then begin with Vayomer Elokim. It's now Shemayim Ba'aretz are finished. And God finishes the creation from all of his work on the seventh day. So are there 6 days of creation in Shabbat, or is Shabbat included in creation? That's a technical question that everyone can decide on their own. But there's definitely 6 days stand alone from the seventh day. On the 6 days, God's making something he didn't exist before. On the seventh day, he rests from everything creative and stops. Why is that important? Because when God makes man, he makes man in his image. And now we're going to go to our other source sheet and make our key statement. What's our claim? We're going to take this equation, and which pretty much the Rambam sort of seems to be saying this in Morin Nevuchim. And I'm going to quote a Maral that says something very similar. But let me explain the definition. What's Tzelem Elokim? If I want to understand what's Tzelem Elokim, it's whatever the difference is between man and animal. If I take that parallel between 6A and 6B, compared to 3A and 3B, if what's special about man is the Tzelem Elokim, because nothing else got created, is described that way. Elokim's been making new things. He's been creative every single day. And that difference between man and animal, whatever man is, it's animal does not have Tzelem Elokim. Man does. So the Rambam explains that what defines Tzelem Elokim, it's the very first chapter in Morin Nevuchim, what defines Tzelem Elokim? Whatever that difference is between man and animal, that's Tzelem Elokim. Now, the Maharal has a beautiful definition of this idea. I'll just read the Maharal and translate. Maharal in Tiferet Yisrael, the first parak. U'miata adam ashuhu nivdal mikol shar balei chayim mitzad ha-nefesh. Man is totally different than everything else that God created. Shein dafsho nefesh be'mit. He doesn't have a soul like an animal. There's something special. We call it, this is neshama. Okay, it's like it has a nefesh that has more wisdom, not like the other animals. Not like the other animals in nature. And listen carefully. What can man do? I'm talking about. I want to use this to explain what I mean by creativity. Man can do. He's a builder. He can be a carpenter. He can do malacha. He can be industrious. Invent new things. He can bake. He can cook. He can bake. He can cook. He can basically process food. And simple things, okay? He makes clothing, things like that, okay? So, badai afki dvarim elu tzuchim lo lenefesh ha-sichli. These are all things that relate to his creative ability. Let me explain what the way I understand the Maharal and the Rambam. Let me stop the share for a minute. What I want to explain is as follows. That let's say you ask somebody, I'll start from scratch. If you ask somebody, write a 3-page composition of how man is different than animal. No, name me difference between man and animal. Most people could do that. At the same time, if you ask them to write a 3-page composition on man is similar than animal, you can do that as well. There are numerous similarities between man and animal, numerous differences. Can you define it? It's impossible, almost impossible to define. I don't think anyone's ever given an exact scientific definition on man is different than animal. There's a lot of similarities, there's a lot of differences, but it's clear that they're different. It's hard to define exactly what the difference is. Some people say the ability to believe that there's no God, maybe. That's my joke. And, you know, man's soul, what's the difference is every animal realizes there must be a creator, and only man can think there's no God. But man has this ability that he's different than animal. Again, it's clear he's different. How to define the difference is difficult. What Rambam seems to be saying, Maimonides, is that whatever that difference is, that's Tzelem Elokim. Now, instead of defining the difference, I want to highlight key differences. That's going to explain a lot of things about life. Okay. Again, now I'll just answer Mari's question real fast. Mari asked a question about how can God command nature? Again, our approach to Chumash is as follows. I'll try to explain this approach. When we read Chumash, we study what's written, not what happened. Hope I don't get in trouble for this, but this is, it's called, in Hebrew, it's called Lomdi Masha Katuv Lo Masha Kara. What happened? That's God's problem. When you study Chumash, you're reading what's written, because the message that God's giving us, the Torah God gave us the Torah, the message is through the written word, and you study the Torah to understand the meaning of life. God doesn't have to give me a history book to tell me how he did it. We believe there's a God, and God gave us the Torah. When God tells us a story, it's to derive from it meaning, to understand the meaning of our lives, to understand why we're chosen, to understand what's the meaning of life, what's our connection to God. What actually happened, in my opinion, is irrelevant. Now, I don't want to get into the topic of historicity. What really happened, what didn't happen, you can argue that from today to tomorrow. But if something didn't happen, that doesn't mean the Torah is not from God. It means you have to take the story seriously, that story carries an important message. So almost, it's very easy, very, very accepted that the first 11 chapters can be taken allegorically, because they're a build-up to understand why Am Yisrael, why God chooses the people. So when you study Sefer Bereishit in detail, because the first 11 chapters are universal, and they're all stories that don't seem to fit with nature very well, and a lot of them contradict, there's internal contradictions in them, and there's numerous parallels in other literature, it could be that Chumash is using those stories as a tool, and we'll see later as a platform, to explain his theology. Now, what I want to suggest is that once I understand that Chumash is making a big deal about men's Tzelem Elokim, and because Elokim every day has been creating new things, and when it's over, we have nature as it is, and there's no more new creations, the last thing God makes is a living thing that can be creative. So if you want to be cute, civilization is over. Creation is over and civilization begins. It's God did his job, and now he gives it over to man. Man's in charge. But that's a big responsibility that man needs to be creative. God wants man to be creative. And now we're going to get to our topic that we talked about last week. What are we doing on Shabbat? We're supposed to work 6 days a week. Means we're supposed to be creative 6 days a week. God made us creative. But that creativity, remember every day has an evaluation of good and bad? God wants us to evaluate our actions and make sure what we create is good, but we have the ability also to do evil. Just read the next chapter. Then we have Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. With the ability to be creative comes the ability to do good and to do bad. So what God does is good. What man does could be good, it could be evil. Now, what do I do to make sure that whatever I do is good? So I need to work 6 days a week. I need to take a break on the seventh day to stop all creativity, to evaluate what I've done and what I'm going to be doing. To make sure that what we do is good, I need to take that break. Not just to say thank you for my creativity. We have to evaluate our creativity because we're in God's image. But we have to make sure that what we do with our creativity are good things. Now, if I take a look quickly at all the things that we do, I'm saying that humans do, they're different than animal. I'll give you examples of things. Again, we can have a longer discussion, but I'll give you classic examples. Number one, clothing. Right? Every other living thing doesn't have clothing, doesn't make clothing. And only humans, now we make clothing, we make a business out of it. But clothing, if someone came from a different planet and observed humans compared to animals, clothing is a key difference. We're the only animal that shed its fur in evolution almost for no reason. Why do we shed our fur and make clothes? And every other animal doesn't need clothing. They survive fine without it. We need clothing. Now, that's number one. When it comes to clothing is a big difference. Number two, when it comes to our diet, no, animals eat other animals. Animals eat fruit. Animals eat vegetation. What do? We eat other animals, but unlike any other animal, before eating them, we cook them. Those animals of prey eat other animals. It happens all the time. They eat them, watch National Geographic, and they eat them, and that's it. They don't take the dead carcass of the animal, make fire, because animals don't make fire either. Only humans make fire, and cook them and then eat them. Just eat it as it is. When it comes to vegetation, no other animal is going to plant grain and plant seeds, wait for them to grow, harvest the grain months later, take those little seeds, instead of eating them as they are, grinding them down into powder, making flour, adding water, putting them in an oven and making bread. It's like ridiculous, isn't it? We got hooked on wheat. We sort of domesticated wheat. But what we do with wheat, we go meshuggah, don't we? We go crazy with wheat. The whole process of making bread is unique to being human. It might be stupidity, but there's no doubt in human culture, bread is a staple. And in fact, in anthropology, pretty much domestication of wheat is the beginning of civilization. Was it 10,000 years ago or 20,000 years ago? But pretty much biblical history begins with the domestication of wheat or civilization and domestication of animals. There's lots of wild animals. But turning animals into a business means taking animals, sheep and cattle, and raising them to simply to shech them and eat them or take their, again, we need sheep to make clothing because we need their wool. So we have to grow sheep so we can, what's it called, shave, what do you call it? What's it called? Sharing the wool.
Shear.
Yeah, to share that. And then making clothing out of that. The whole project of clothing. It's like crazy, isn't it? But we grow them, and then we eat them, and then we drink their milk. We make a business out of it, and then we sell all the babies, etc. That's called, we domesticated animals, sheep and cattle. And those are the two ancient professions for males in the Bible, right? Cain and Hevel, one's a farmer, and a shepherd.
Shepherd.
Yeah, shepherds and farmers. And you know, that those are the two main professions we have. Now, that's unique again to humans. The whole idea of industry, making houses, you know, it's making bricks, like taking fire and making building materials. Remember, we just covered all the stories in the first 11 chapters, didn't we? Migdal Bavel, the first industrial revolution, making cities make with bricks and mortar. The animals don't build cities. Again, ants can make an ant farm, but they make the same ant farm every year. It's in their DNA. They don't write books. Now, humans take their thoughts. Animals communicate. Humans also communicate, but animals also talk to each other. But humans take their thoughts, write them down on paper, and can transmit their thoughts to the next generation or to other people through writing. As far as we know, animals don't do that. We've never seen them writing things. They might make marks instead, but the idea of creative writing, they can even write Lashon Hara if they want. But humans have this ability to transmit their thoughts through writing. And they use fire for construction and things like that. That those are all things that any outside observer would notice how humans are different than animals. Now, is that a minor difference or is that a major difference? I'm just saying it's not a definition of Tzelem Elokim. It's an indicator that man is different than animal. Now, why do I give those examples? Because those examples are basically all the things that we don't do on Shabbat. You with me? Hope you realize that. It's like as simple as could be. And I'm going to work backwards now and prove my point from the laws of Shabbat. Because if you remember the laws of Shabbat, there's 39 melachot, last count. If I look at the 39 melachot, there's a whole process of making bread called Sidur HaDapat. I think there's 11 there, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah. There's 11 melachot of the whole process of making bread, from planting the seeds to plowing the field to reaping the field to to winnowing and till you get those, till you get the grains and then grinding them and then adding water. It's called lash. And then finally cooking the dough. Not to mention making fire later, for the oven. The whole process of making clothing called bigud. The whole process of making clothing, I think that's 13. From the time you take the shearing the sheep and, bleaching it, making it white, and then stringing it, and then making the thread, and then the whole process of weaving until you make the clothing. The whole process of making clothing, that's not it. The whole process of writing, okay, and all classes of a building, an industry. And the last one is the only malacha, which isn't really malacha, is is havar, is moving things, right? Carrying. Which I call moving inventory, which is basically how to make money. Moving inventory, I think that's what Hutzah is. It's marketplace, moving inventory and selling it and making a business out of it. Those are all things that are unique to humans. What I'm getting at is what we don't do on Shabbat are almost all the things that the rabbis defined as forbidden on Shabbat all relate to the difference between man and animal. They're all the things, the definition of work on Shabbat, almost everything we don't do on Shabbat are all the things that remind us how we're different than animal. So God wants us to do these things. These typify our Tzelem Elokim. So we refrain from them one day a week so that when I do them on the 7 days of the week, I remember that God made me B'Tzelem Elokim. Now, not just to say thank you again, but to act in a way to evaluate what I'm doing it right. The best example for Shabbat, remember every day of creation, what does God say? God says command, execution, evaluation. I think the rabbis call that Melechet Machshevet. It means to be chayv on Shabbat, to do something wrong on Shabbat, I have to think about doing it and then do it. It can't happen just by accident or without thought. Only thoughtful work, thoughtful creativity. And again, that's a parallel to what God did on every day of creation. So if Shabbat is there to remind man that he's made B'Tzelem Elokim, then all the things we don't do on Shabbat are B'Tzelem Elokim. Now, what you all learned is that the things we don't do are the things they did in the Mishkan. But again, we'll do this. We'll have to do this in a separate share. Is that all the things that we do in the Mishkan are for the exact same reason. Because everything that we do in the Mishkan all reminds us that God made us B'Tzelem Elokim. I mean, it's the same theme. Because when we go to the temple, when we go visit God in the temple, we're going to remind ourselves of creation. The parallels between the Mishkan and creation, anyone who studied Trumet Tetzaveh V'Yakob Pkudei knows that there's numerous parallels between the creation story and the Mishkan. And there's all questions, is the Mishkan, does the Mishkan reflect creation or revelation? There's all the parallels between building the Mishkan and Har Sinai, but there's also numerous parallels between building the Mishkan and creation. You can't miss them when you study them, especially not just the 7 days of Miluim, as we'll see, but the whole process of Moshe seeing everything he made, Moshe evaluates everything they did, and everything is good. But what are we doing in the Mishkan? All the Kelim are going to remind us of things that how man is different than animal. What do we put on the Mizbeach? Only the domesticated animals. And of course, processed food, processed grain, and processed wine. I should have mentioned, no animal in the right mind can take good, juicy grapes, stamp on them, take the water, let the water sit and get ruined, and get the thing, and then sell it for $100 a bottle and say it tastes good. Only humans do things like that. No animal is going to make wine and then sell it and make a business out of it. It's so typical, and therefore, wine, what goes on the Mizbeach, Nisuch Hayayim, remember, pouring wine. Fine basolet, or bread. We show off our bread. Then we have lechem apanim. We have a candle light at night, the menorah. We have the written word in the Kodesh Kodeshim.
What's your rush?
Kids will be here at 12. I don't want to walk before they come. I want to take, you know what? You listen. I'm going to go for a walk.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, I'll get the chat in a minute. My time's up already. I better get the chat right now. So again, I jumped ahead, but just for the fun of it, in case I forget next week, look at the things we do to bring Shabbat in. We light candles. It's unique to humans, right? Making light at night. We make kiddush on wine. We make a motzi on bread, right? All the things that remind us of how we're different than animal. Those ideas are so obvious when you look at them. And what I'm trying to show you is that, again, I can't prove this interpretation is correct. I'm just making a big deal about how man, B'tzelem Elokim, is, in my opinion, one of the key points of the creation story. Man needs to remember that God made him with that ability to be creative. What you do with your creativity, okay, that's what God wants you to evaluate and do what's good. And if you don't take a break, what you need to do, we take a break one day every 7 days. Like, God describes his own creation in human terms. Like, he describes a 7-day work week or a 6-day work week and 1 day to rest. And remember, and he sees everything's tov va'od at the end. So that's what we need to do. We work 6 days a week and we evaluate, and then we hopefully do what's good. Okay, my time's up. I guess I'll develop this better next week. Now, what we're going to see is this number 7 relates to the creation of nature, as God made it. And therefore, every time we're going to have a holiday that relates to nature, anything that relates to nature is going to go to 7. This theme is so basic to not just to Judaism, to humankind, to recognizing that there's a God and there's something special about humans, and humans have responsibility. You know, God blessed them with the ability to be creative, but what we do with that blessing is going to be the challenge of human life. Later, God's going to pick a nation to be his model nation that uses their creativity properly. That's what we have to, again, be all these things we have to develop. I just want to show you today that the story of creation with number 7 relates first and foremost to God making nature and God making man with his ability to be creative. And then we're going to have lots of mitzvot that revolve around the number 7, but specifically because of the story of creation, everything that relates to nature and man's creativity is going to relate to 7. We'll find it in the temple. We'll find it in Shabbat. We'll find it in tons of laws. But today, I just wanted to open up this theme of 7 with creation. And my point is that God did not create. We don't keep Shabbat because God created in 7 days. God gave us a creation story. God gave us a creation story, so that we appreciate what it means, what the meaning of our creativity, and to give meaning to Shabbat. God wants us to keep Shabbat, to make Shabbat meaningful. He gives us a creation story. And then that basically, again, it's not just apologetics. It's not solving the problem of how do you match science with what it says in the Torah. It shows you it's simply not a question. Okay, so let me stop here and look at the questions real fast. And we'll go back to this because they did the last 5 minutes way too fast. We'll finish this next week and take it from creation to the rest of Sefer Bereshit and where the number 7 comes up there in the beginning of Shemot. Okay, so let's go back. Let's go back and see what the questions were. Okay, source sheets will be posted in a minute. Okay, the source sheets later. Okay, the royal we. Okay, that's very good. Later we'll do a share if we have time about why what we gain by doing that plural, what the royal we is about, what we learn from it. Okay. Doesn't Ramban say somewhere the mitzvot have to be fleshed out somehow so that if 7, one can ask why not 6 or 8, but nothing special about the number until the number is established? To my friends in favor and roses of them. Okay. It could be. Again, that's a question on the Rambam. I'm just saying that once God picked 7, in my opinion, if I'm going to find the number 7, that this is my whole point. If I'm going to find 7 years of Shemitah and 7 days of Shabbat and 7 lambs when I bring a korban and 7 years of famine and 7 years of good and 7 and so many different mitzvot, 7 days of Tumah and Tahara, and we're going to see almost all those things relate to nature. My point is, Chumash is setting in this opening story how when any mitzvah that we have has seven, has to remind us of this theme of not only that God created, but why he gave man the ability to be creative, or what's the responsibility of man, how to use his creativity, and man seeing himself as a partner with God in creation. Then I'll try to flesh that out as we continue. Okay. On day three, but why does it say two times it was good on day three? So ask almost anybody, that was a direct message. When someone asked me privately, is why does it say twice it was good on day three? The answer is simple now. Not just so we can charge more money for a wedding hall on Tuesday because it's a school life to get married, you know, Pamayim Kitov. There's a deeper reason. There's two evaluations on the third day because there's two acts of creation on the third day. So the reason why it says there's two evaluations on day three is because there's two acts of creation on day three. Why there's no evaluation on day two, I'll deal with that in another class. The fact that, you know, that division, lahavdil, there's something missing on day two, which is the reason why there's no evaluation on that day. Not that there's nothing good about it, but it needs to be held up. But day three has two acts of creation, therefore it says twice kitov. Therefore, I'd expect on day six two pamayim kitovs. Instead, what do we have? We have God sees it's good when he makes animals on 6A. And 6B, he doesn't look at man and sees he's good. He sees his whole creation that it's good. Everything he made is Tov Mod. Man by itself is not so good, as we'll find out in world history. But he can be good. I think there's something there as well. But this explains beautifully why day three has two evaluations. Okay. 6A and 6B, the verb is different. What do you mean by the verb is different? The command, can someone explain what you mean by what Asher asked?
It's the vayivra for man.
Oh, yeah, the verb is different for sure. That was,
yeah, he starts out with vayas and then he changes. Yeah. The way he does it, he says vayivra.
Yeah, so that's right.
There's
so,
only three examples of bara.
Shemayim ba'aretz, when God makes Shemayim ba'aretz, is the bara of days one through four.
Yesh me'ayin.
Yeah. If bara is really yesh me'ayin, that's a big machloket. But assuming that something from nothing is bara, then when God makes Shemayim ba'aretz, the first 4 days is one bara. When he makes the animal kingdom with the taninim, there's another bara.
A different form of life that moves. Yeah.
Like every stage from tzomech, from domain tzomech, chay medaber, there's four different stages. So, and when he makes man, again, the verb bara by man is highlighting the difference. Okay, in other words, 6ACP is different on purpose. Having bara by man is, again, everything's highlighting the man's different than animal. Even though it's so easy to think that man, when I look at nature, I can easily see man is simply a super duper ape. You know, but we're part of the animal kingdom. And that's the question, are we part of the animal kingdom? Or are we above it all? Are we something godly? And then this will help us explain what happens in the flood later on. Okay, another anonymous question. How can Adam be fruitful and multiply when he's only human? So when God makes man, that was a direct message. Someone wrote me, how can God tell Adam to be fruitful and multiply if he's only a male? But when you read carefully, you mix up chapter 2 and chapter 1. Plural verse in chapter 1, God makes man zachar nekeva. In chapter 1, God makes Adam is the name of the species, not the name of Adam. Yeah. It's not like Adam and Adam and Eve. Adam is the name of the species, not the name of Adam HaRishon. And God made man, Zachar Nekeva Barotam. Now Rashi says, Gan Eden is how he made them, Zachar Nekeva. But again, that has to do with how we read chapter 1 and chapter 2. But Pur Vu is assuming there's Zachar Nekeva. In fact, everything that God makes that's alive from 3B, from vegetation, everything that God makes is highlighting reproduction. Eitz Sev Masri Azer, Eitz Pri Osa Pri. Everything reproduces itself. Fish, Pruervu. Humans, again, Pruervu. The whole animal kingdom. Okay. What does it mean for God to command to nature which has no free will? Okay. So there's a problem about free will. Again, I'm dealing with the text, not so much in philosophy. But how God commands, I'm just saying this is a story that explains that what we call nature is an act of God. Now, you know, Spinoza took this to the nth degree and said, in essence, what is nature? Like the sum total of nature is God. And our understanding is exactly opposite. That God is Kadosh, God's separate from his creation, and he made it. But that's, again, that's a topic more in philosophy. So again, why God uses human terms to describe his actions, what's the fancy word again? Anthropomorphism. In order to relate to God, that's in order to enable us to relate to God, Chumash describes God in human terms. Okay. How God did it, that's God's problem. We know that he did it. We don't know how he did it. Maybe a scientist can tell us finally how he did it. Chumash talks about why God did it, or what's it mean to man? What's the meaning of life now that there is life? And now that God gives me neshama, no, it's God gives, I'm alive, but we die, but we, God gives us life and gives us creative ability. What do we do with that creativity? I think that's, you know, it's, I studied Chumash to find out what I need to do, not how God did it. How God did it, I don't know. But I think all those questions about historicity, what actually happened, you know, and how God actually did it, I don't think that's the topic of Chumash. Okay, and on Shabbat, we should reflect, in other words, yeah, so Shabbat is time of reflection, of looking back at what we did and looking forward, evaluating last week and looking forward. Now, is the goal of the week to get to Shabbat, or is the goal of Shabbat to make the week meaningful? That you can have a discussion on Shabbat about, or before Shabbat. Okay. Okay, 7 is also the largest primary number, that's for sure. Or under 10, that's true. There's why God picked 7, because every other day would be logical. Like 7 is the first number. I wouldn't, that's just the primary number. It's, there's logic to 1 and 2 and 3, 3 like that, and 4, 4, like they're all natural. The 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, they're all like, we have 5 fingers and 4, the 4 sides, the 4, like 4 is a nice even number. Everything, 6 is like a cube kind of stuff. 7 is the first number that there's nothing, there's no natural phenomena to go 7. Except I think it may be the colors of the rainbow, which might explain maybe the symbolism of the rainbow covenant. But 7 is not, is totally unnatural, and I think that's why we use it as the number. But again, God picked 7, and that's what makes it special, because God picked it. But 7 is going to relate to nature, because it's, I guess, because it's not natural. Okay, physical nature is defined by number 7. Space domain is 3-dimensional, but you can go backwards and forwards, okay? Okay. So that 6 that we were saying about the different things, Ebenezer has a whole big thing on it, if I'm not mistaken. I think in Bereshit, of why 7 reflects nature with the 6 sides. Ebenezer has a whole thing on numbers that goes very similar to what Asher was talking about there in his post. Okay. And okay. Anyway, so again, we're over time for a change. So we'll stop here. Bateya was breaking the ice on the number 7. That's why we needed to share on creation to get that started. And then how this, again, I'm using it to explain Shabbat and Shemitah, but we just broke the ice on the number 7 today. There's something going on there. The main thing is whether my interpretation is correct, you can argue, but from an objective point of view, the start of creation is building up something. You know, the number 7 relates to nature, and everything has to do with nature later on is going to relate to 7. So I gave it my own take on why all the melachot of Shabbat, how the rabbis understand Shabbat. But the idea that man, the idea of tzelem elokim has to be something really key and basic. Okay, I guess we'll stop here, Rabbi.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Look forward to next week. Okay, this week, we, in addition to our regular shiurim, we have 2 new series starting tomorrow. Rabbi Dr. Lindsay Taylor Guhartz will begin her 7-part series on Lost in Translation, the History of Translations of Tanakh, from London, England. And that'll be tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. from London, 6 p.m. in Israel. And Wednesday evening, 8 p.m., Dr. Moshe Sokolov, he, of course, did all last year, Wednesday at 8, on the Haftarah, will be giving a series, Rabbi, for you, how Tanakh was put together. That's starting this Wednesday night. Dr. Sokolov has written a number of books on this sort of general topic, so that will begin this Wednesday. Our regular shiurim, of course, all week tomorrow night. Mark Shapiro continuing Great Rabbinic Thinkers on Shaul Lieberman. Part 8, I believe, is tomorrow, but each class is a little bit independent. Of course, you can listen to the about 250 ones he's done up to now on various people. Tuesday, Rachel Danziger Sharansky on relationships in Genesis. Wednesday, Bivrit Rav Yosef Carmel from Kollel Eretz Chemda will be giving part two at 1:15 Eastern, 8:15 in Israel, on David HaMelech, Kemiyaseitza Medina Atzmait HaRishona, and it's sort of the Hashlachot for today. And then Thursday, Shuli Mishkin, as we mentioned, is not giving her shir this because her son is getting married, Rabbi Liebdag. I'm sure you know that. The Mishkins are making a wedding next week, so Shuli will miss this Thursday's class, and of course we'll just postpone continue the series an extra week. Thursday night from Sydney, Australia, should I say from Friday morning, here at 8:30 p.m. on the East Coast, but 10:30 a.m. in Sydney, Australia, Rabbi David Blackman will be giving the Parshat Shavua shiur, and Friday morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time, I'll be giving this shiur on A Close Look at the Siddur. So that's enough to keep you busy all week. Like I say, your job is to invite one friend to come to at least one class and try it out. That's why we let you come for free, on condition that you invite a friend to come and join for free too. You know the old joke, you send the Jew, it's thank you, sends 10 other people. You know that joke, Rabbi, right? With the barber? Yeah, everybody knows that joke, right?
I guess so.
The barber, the priest comes to get a haircut, and the barber said, I don't charge men of the clergy. And so the next day, the priest sends him a bottle of wine. And then an imam comes, and the barber, oh, no, I won't charge people of the clergy. So the next day, he sends him whatever, gift flowers. And the Jew, the rabbi comes, and the next day, there are 15 other rabbis at the barber. So that's right. So that's what I do. I make it for free. You invite 15 other, they don't be rabbis. They can be whatever they want, other people to come and join. So that's okay, everybody. Have a wonderful day. We'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow, other times during the week. And okay, Shavua Tov. Be well, everybody. Thank you very much. And thank you, Rabbi. We'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, very good. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
I hope I tell jokes okay. That's you have to know how to tell the joke, how the punchline goes, but okay. Anyway.
Okay. All right. Are you going to post the source sheets on?
Yes, already. Rabbi, there's some complaining. How come? We'll have to talk.
I always post them afterward. I'm afraid if I post them before and people look ahead and then I can't.
I know that, but sometimes people post it the link in the chat.
Right. No. So we made a mistake. I got up the source sheet at just before the class, and then Rabbi put it up. No, put it up after the class. So if people.
Oh, yeah, last time I sent the link. Yeah, I can send you the link right now if you want. But yeah. I can't share. That's okay. So it'll be on the website. It'll be fine.
Yeah, one of them is on the web. Yeah, the one with all your information is on the website. Not the Psukim didn't make it, but I'll have that put up.
The PDF thing. Yeah, that's just
the question is, so maybe in the future, that's what the rabbi prefers. Like I say, if there's a revolt and people demand that it goes up before, then we can talk to the rabbi and ask him if he'll allow us to post it in advance. But right now,
I like it better that I have it's a review sheet after this year instead of during this year.
It's okay to post it after, but it helps if you post it after in the chat. So then
I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah. So in the chat now. So yeah. Rabbi, you can post it in the chat now.
When I share file. No, I have to save it.
You know what? I have to do it from my website. Hold on a second. But I don't have the whole thing. I have. Okay. Give me 1 second. Hopefully within 20 seconds, I can have it up. Yeah, no, I'm going to put it up in 20 seconds. I just need whatever for the pages to open. Sometimes it takes, a few seconds. Here we go. Just the last page, October 17th, short sheet. Okay, here it's coming up. Okay, just let me copy and paste, and it will be up right now. And make sure my email goes to everyone in meeting. And here you go. Okay, there it is.
Okay, thank you.
That's saying it doesn't have the psukim part though. That I didn't realize only one of the sources went up. Like it's got the what he said. So the psukim part will when it goes up, it'll be on the website. I'm sorry. Heard, Rabbi Liebdag sent the sources an hour before.
It's a different PDF file because it's landscape instead of portrait. So it can't be on the same. It's got to be a separate file.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess you can put the two PDFs together if you have. I'll figure out how to do that one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.
I hope you know the joke about telling jokes.
Uh-oh. No.
Comedians convention. You don't know that?
I don't know.
A new stand-up comic just starting out in the business. And he meets a veteran comic who invites him to the annual comedians convention. So he comes with him and they sit down, and the room is a big auditorium filled with 100 comics, right? And all of a sudden, one of them stands up and shouts out, 39.
Oh, yeah.
Rakes into laughter. I know the joke. Yeah. Right? Okay. You know the joke.
Yeah. But you can continue, right?
So another guy.
I heard it was in jail. The way I heard it was in jail. The inmates used to yell out. They told the joke so often they were so bored, so they go 52 and everybody would laugh. And a new inmate comes in, and so he says, he yells out 43 and nobody laughs. So they say, why not? I said, you have to know how to tell a joke.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But anyways, okay, Rabbi, enough joking. I got a work to do. Got to get, as Rabbi said. Seriously, we got to literally and seriously. Okay. So, thanks everybody. Okay. Have a wonderful day. Okay.